And I think there's two more of them, and I think they'll both be, you know, really short. So with your indulgence. So what the talks were about was a kind of archetypal Zen narrative, you know, of going into the dark and blasting back up into the light. And they took their impetus, among other places, from the Shito Shichen taking part in the gathering, which, if you're in other traditions, will be Sekito, the Sandokai. And we focused in various ways in particular on these lines. The mysterious source of the bright is clear and unstained. Branches of light stream from that dark. Trying to control things is only delusion, but hanging onto the absolute isn't enlightenment either. We and everything we perceive are interwoven and not interwoven, and this interweaving continues on and on while each thing stands in its own place. And so we talked a little bit about just the sort of general trajectory of things, and then we spent one time talking about sort of versions of sinking down into the dark mysterious. And then we'd noted also, focusing especially on this interweaving, we and everything we perceive are interwoven and not interwoven, and this interweaving continues on and while each thing stands in its own place. We'd noted the kind of paradox of those, in some sense, sort of diametrically opposed or seemingly opposed responses to coming back up out of the darkness. And we talked the last time, which is now a couple months ago, I apologize for that again, we talked last time about the sort of interweaving aspect and all that. And so I wanted to get back to the standing in its own place, which, as I said when we began these talks, is in a way perhaps the part of the experience or the narrative or the trajectory that feels more unexpected or less Zen or something like that. So one of the things I mentioned the first time I started talking on this was an interchange that happened on the email list, actually, for the open source. And somebody had quoted Whitman, which startled me, since in my day job I'm a Whitman scholar. And it's this end of Song of Myself. It's just part of it. But the spotted hawk swoops by and accuses me. He complains of my gab and my loitering. I, too, am not a bit tamed. I, too, am untranslatable. I sound my barbaric yawp over the roofs of the world. And I thought, oh, that's great Whitman, but it has nothing to do with Buddhism or Zen. So I got on the list and said that. And my friend, who I've lost track of at this point, but she hasn't sat with us in a long time, but Mary Montoya from Colorado, got on there and said something about how the moment was really important to her, and she would like to think that in this moment both the hawk and Whitman learned something important. And so she was insisting that the barbaric yawp was really an important part of the experience. And so I've said this a couple times, but it's always fun to say it. So one night, a couple months after that, it was nighttime, and I was out in my yard, and two of my dogs were there, including the preposterous little Chihuahua, who all Chihuahuas think they're the king of the universe. And there was this little dog, you know, and he still does this, you know, he's really old now, but this little dog in the yard, and he just started going, and it was just clear that he was convinced that, you know, he was completely the bee's knees, and if anybody had ever said, you know, below the heavens and above the earth, only I am the world honored one, he was just all full of that. And I just thought, oh my God, and then they kind of thought, well, if he can do it, I should be able to do it too, you know, so that's where we're headed, you know, we're just sort of exfoliating from the Chihuahua King for the next few minutes here. So what I want to do is I want to just mostly quote, and then I'll say just a couple other things. I want to do a little bit of Hakuin and then the Suzuki book, Suzuki Roshi book, on taking part in the gathering on the Sandokai, which is called Branching Streams Flow in the Darkness. So the Hakuin that I'm reading, I guess what I'm trying to do is say, you know, I'm not making it all up. Real Zen guys say it too, you know. This is Hakuin from a really beautiful book on the Heart Sutra, which has the strangely schmaltzy title, Zen Words for the Heart, Hakuin's commentary on the Heart Sutra, but it's a great, great book. I'm just going to quote a couple little things. So there's a, in the translation that's in that book, which is not identical to ours from the Heart Sutra, Hakuin's commenting on this little passage. No eye, ear, nose, tongue, body, mind. No form, sound, scent, touch, taste, touch, dharmas. No realm of seeing, and so on to no realm of consciousness. And Hakuin, who's wonderfully irascible like the Chihuahua, says this. He says, well, I have ears and eyes, a nose, tongue, body, and mind. Form, sound, smells, taste, touch, and dharmas do exist. Beneath an empty autumn sky stretch endless wastes where no one goes. Who is that horseman riding from the west? So it's really important that out of that empty waste, all of a sudden there's the horseman who vigorously comes riding forward. And then another passage that I really love that Connie actually read at my sensei ceremony last year, Hakuin says, and he's talking about emptiness here, you know, in that wham aspect, right? A stone woman works a shuttle, skinny elbows flying, which I think is a kind of abstract image. And then a mud cow barrels through the surf, bearing her bicuspids. And the notion that for Hakuin, that's profoundly emptiness, that's profoundly what sort of comes up out of nothing, is really important. And it's not the same thing as everything intermingling. So that sense of something standing in its own place with sometimes remarkable energy and barking a lot, as it were, is also an important part of what comes out of practice. So here are a few long passages from Suzuki Roshi in his talks on the Sandokai. The text says, all the objects of the senses interact and yet do not. Although things are interrelated, everyone, every being, can be the boss. Each one of us can be a boss because we are so closely related. And here he's talking about Mel Weitzman, who's somebody who became a teacher a little bit after he died. But if I say Mel, and Mel was Norman Fisher's teacher, and Norman, I guess, got transmission from Mel. Anyway, if I say Mel, Mel is already not just Mel. He's one of Zen Center's students, so to see Mel is to see Zen Center. If you see Mel, you understand what Zen Center is. But if you think, oh, he's just Mel, then your understanding is not good enough. You don't know who Mel is. If you have a good understanding of things themselves, you will understand the whole world through things. Each one of us is the boss of the whole world. And when you have this understanding, you will realize that things are interrelated, yet they are also independent. Each one of us is completely and absolutely independent. There is nothing to compare. You are just you. And then a little bit further on, there is nothing to compare yourself to, so you have your own value. That value is not a comparative or an exchange value. It is more than that. When you are just sitting zazen on the cushion, you have your own value. Although that value is related to everything, that value is absolute. Maybe it is better not to say too much. And then later on in the passage, I didn't quite, he says, maybe I can't explain this so good. In Zen, sometimes we say that each one of us is steep like a cliff. No one can scale us. We are completely independent. But when you hear me say so, you should understand the other side too, that we are essentially interrelated. If you only understand one side of the truth, you can't hear what I'm saying. If you don't understand Zen words, you don't understand Zen, you are not yet a Zen student. Zen words are different from usual words. Like a double-edged sword, they cut both ways. And then again further on, the Sandokai's words are also double-edged. One side is interdependence and one side is independence. This independency goes on and on everywhere, and yet things stay in their own places. That is the main point of the Sandokai. Another thing that happened at the retreat in Oracle, aside from people staying up all night tending the fire so we didn't freeze, was Joan giving a talk about something like this and actually using Connie as an example, you know, the Connie-ness of Connie, and associating that with Tathagata, which is thus come, thus gone, and also true suchness. And so that sense of things standing at you with chihuahua-like suchness or Tathagata-hood, to use an awful word, is the same thing as what I'm talking about. I'm going to risk bad taste again, as I've been doing, and throw in a personal experience, which is sometimes frowned on, but sometimes not. And I talked a little bit about some of my sort of interpermeation experiences, and I want to say just a little bit about and this other sort of chihuahua experience from a particular retreat. So I was already sort of deep into the retreat, and a lot of things were happening, including some of the things I talked about last time. And I remember thinking, oh, you know, I'm going to get in to see Joan, and in a way there's nothing more that should happen, but I shouldn't waste the time, so I'll keep kind of sitting with it and see what else happens. And I had been to the ocean for a long week trip a few days before that, and, you know, been out body surfing and had that real sense of movement in the ocean with me. And so I was just sitting with that feel of the ocean, but at the same time there was this kind of image of being a little bit above it. And so I, as we'll do, I kind of concocted a project for myself, and it was kind of like, first dip my foot in, you know, and then the rest. And so and finally I thought that was just silly and I should just give up and just not do anything at all. And really shortly after that, there was just this incredible jolt, you know, and it was as if the entire ocean had just sort of, the energy of it had come up into my body and lodged there. And then the best image I can give of it, though it's kind of silly, is, you know, if you're building something out of, you know, one of those little furniture assembly kits, or if you're building a kid's toy, you kind of get the part in, and then if you get it right, it goes click. And once it goes click, it's not going anywhere. And it really felt like that click, you know, it's like it clicked and it wasn't going to go anywhere. And there it was, you know, that I put the toy together right, and so emptiness was there inside me and the ocean was there inside me. And walking around after that, it was just that Tathagata sense of everything that was incredibly vivid, you know, just the tree, the birds, and so on. And I'll say that in some important sense, that that feel of the world has not gone away. You know, it really, really stays there. And to be a little aggrandizing or self-aggrandizing for a moment, and then I'll try to tear it down, and then I'll be done. One of the things that came with that was a feeling of not being exiled anymore. You know, that if we think about that version of, like, our real life is somewhere else, or we've lost our original home, or it really didn't feel that way anymore at all. And the sense of being just really cheek by jowl with the source, you know, is pretty present. So that seems really, really important. I guess the next thing I want to say, and this is really where I'm going to head next time, I don't know whether it should be called enlightenment or whatever, but just since it's the word Suzuki uses, I'll say, somebody asked Suzuki Roshi in the little bit of teaching anecdotes with him that we're going to be working on in Dharma Dialogue. Somebody says, well, is enlightenment a complete remedy? And he says, no, it's not a complete remedy, but it's a pretty good remedy, you know, which I really like. And so what I want to talk about next time is, like, all the stuff that doesn't solve, you know, if you have, and most of us, if you practice for a long time, you have some version of a kind of awakening experience of one sort or another. And it's really important to have a sense of what it changes and also of what it doesn't change right away. And the other thing is that, you know, that's the moment at which, you know, now it's time to begin the 700 koans and to practice for 30 years to see what you can make of yourself. But in some important way, it feels that it's on at least a slightly different footing, you know. So that's all I want to say. And I apologize for talking about my own experiences so much. But we have a few minutes if there are any questions or
question.
Comments.
Yeah. The part you quoted the Sandokai from Suzuki Roshi, how do you think it relates to that, what we talked about, that Uchiyama talked about, how we each create, we each have our own world?
I thought it was just the same thing, yeah. Okay. And also that sense that, remember, in the, we've been reading Uchiyama's, Mary brought in comments on So Dogen's instruction to the cook. And I think also the thing about, in a way, sort of, you know, nobody can bail you out of your own life, that you are you and you're just you. And that the wonderful Xiaozhou story that Norman actually quotes, you know, somebody comes to him for, says, well, you know, now that I've begun to practice, I pray you please teach me. And Dogen says, you know, excuse me, but I have to go pee. Imagine even such a trivial thing as that I have to do for myself. So that's kind of a Chihuahua thing. So anything else? See, it was nice I finished early, so we could close early if we want to, if there are other announcements or anything.
Just here, if anybody has
okay.
Something
yeah.
That's really good. I'm having a laugh thinking of everybody here in this room doing the Chihuahua thing. Wouldn't that be a wonderful idea?
I like the image of the horseman coming riding.
I'm curious about your apology for sharing your personal experience, in that, is there something about personal experience that isn't to be shared?
Supposedly, in a lot of versions of the tradition, it's kind of bad taste to talk about your own experiences. But I think it's a good reference point. I think Yasutani apparently used to, when people had an opening at a retreat, he would parade them around at the end of the retreat. They sort of like get in a line and the newly awakened ones or something. But there was one retreat where Joan asked a bunch of us to sort of talk about varieties of experience like that. And certainly John, in his books, there's a couple of really neat chapters where he's sort of recounting people's experience of some version of an opening. And they're really neat because they're so modern and everything. Like some guy is like staring at the radio dial back in. It's not that modern. In the days when they had radio dials, you know. And the radio dial just went whomp. You know, so stuff like that. But in general, I don't know. Maybe we're outgrowing it or maybe not. But there's sort of an appropriate reticent decorum about talking about your own experiences that changed you in some way.
I think there's also a piece, though, added to that is that so what?
Right.
You know, that's not good. To you.
Yeah, no, that's exactly
like,
right. Yeah.
If you make it into something special,
yeah.
It happened then, this is now.
Yeah.
So what?
Okay.
You know, that you don't want to attach to that either. It's important to know these things happen, but what does it mean?
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing I'll say about that from within the Koan tradition and sort of John's way of talking about it is that one of the ways, and the other traditions obviously have other ways of mm-hmm. making this happen, but one of the ways that happens is, okay, so now that's great. Now here's the next Koan.
Right.
You know,
yeah,
and you're an idiot again, you know,
yeah.
It's like, and so it's always sort of knocking you off balance and, you know, doing the next thing.
And sometimes the so what really is a question. So
yeah,
what?
Right, for sure.
You know,
that's
what?
Yeah.
Well, and related to the other questions what grabbed me was so what? So what changed and what didn't change? And
right.
sort of just observing it because, you know, in the moment it happens,
right.
you might think, I'm enlightened, my whole experience is going to be different. And then you're off retreat and you're like, well, not that much is different.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, I guess that's what strikes me is that, you know, something may change and something may not change and
yeah.
it's...
Well, you did allude a little bit to the difference afterwards. You know,
yeah, I want to talk some more next time about stuff that doesn't change, and I won't be so personal for that.
I mean,
you know,
I think it's
yeah.
also for people who've never had this experience, it's, I think there's something about sharing it that might make it, not by your sharing it, but in our own inexperience and practice about this is something we're working towards, and you can't work towards it. Do you know what,
yeah.
what I mean? You can't make it happen.
Yeah.
You can't study for it. You can't,
right.
you know, just...
Right.
Well, ultimately, I mean, everything's just a series of experiences, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
that's one experience
yeah.
out of a whole lifetime sequence of experiences.
I like it, kind of, quite what you said. It's a little bit of a guide for me, something, just a marker,
yeah.
you know. What someone else, I don't know.
Cool. Yeah. I thought when
I
we.
I feel it's enriching for myself.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
I thought what happened when we had that session up in Santa Fe in a way is it made it a little more sort of regular stuff. Do you know what I mean? Because it wasn't as if anybody had an experience that was profoundly different from what anybody in the room had had, and it also wasn't, you know, I don't know, like.
I mean,
it wasn't, yeah, it wasn't like Japanese war chariots descended and people had become 12th century samurais or something. You know? They'd had an experience that shifted things for them a little bit, you know. And those experiences, I think, are very close to experiences that everybody has sitting. I mean, one thing I want to say next time, just to anticipate a little bit, is to use Freud a little bit. I mean, Freud's got a different model of stuff that's in the mind, but one of the things he does is when he's talking about therapy is he talks about an economic sense of that stuff, you know. So it's like, oh, you know, like the Dickens thing, it's like, oh, income $50, expenses $49, happiness, income $50, expenses $50.10, misery and ruin, you know? But it's that sense that even if things shift a little bit, that gives you a slightly different leverage sometimes to work on stuff. I mean, that would be the point of it, maybe, you know?
To me, too, the interesting thing is, so how does it change how I am in my world, you know? Because experience I mean, it happens because of all that brought you to that moment, but then where, you know, that would be interesting to me. Okay, and you talked a little bit about what, how am I different in my world after that?
We should all talk about that. Sometimes the answer is not enough. You know, I don't know if you remember, Paul, that Mary, that one of the times that John Tarrant came down, and Karen Robinson said something in a Q&A after the talk. She said, so I have this friend who's almost finished his Cohen work, you know, and how come he's such a jerk? And then John did this thing about how he thought all questions were really about yourself. So the question was, why was Karen worried about the implications of that? And, you know, she didn't want to play, but, you know.
Well, so sure. It is a legitimate question.
It's a great question. Yeah.
But the context of how you shared your experience, it was natural, it flowed, it wasn't. Then we're bowing down in an undue way of ego coming back. It was a very unassuming way you presented it.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Thanks. And thanks for coming.
Tammy, I'm just curious. It's like when you first, you know, were apologizing about sharing your experience, I was thinking, like, you know, in reading this, you know, How to Cook Your Life, this book we're reading in the Dharma Dialogue, there's lots of stories. So it's more a lot of personal stories, but it's more a general prohibition on sharing your experiences with awakening.
That's right. Yeah, that's cool. Okay. Yeah.
Well, I'm pleased to be sitting now with a sense of both and.
Yeah, thank you. We need t-shirts soon.
I had an awakening, it doesn't rain down.
Oh, God, this is like a t-shirt.
So I guess we should close.
I think it bears saying, Tenny and I saw a little flyer, I don't know if anybody else saw it, but Ginger passed on into Cat Heaven on January 8th, and so.
Yeah, there's one right there.
And there's one there, but I just think... Yeah. She was an important part of our experience many weeks.
Okay, thanks.
So for new people, there are